You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, March 14th. My pleasure to be with you. It's a Tuesday that feels like a Monday for me because I was out yesterday driving across the beautiful state of Kentucky and I had a best of episode for you. But on the other hand, yesterday was a Monday that felt like a Tuesday because I had tacos last night. Can you do that? Listen, there are no rules. My pleasure to have you. We've got a couple of guests today. Of course, it's March Madness time. And so at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to my friend Matt Swain. Matt, who is the communications director for the Coming Home Network, based out of Ohio, Marcus Grody's organization that really works to help support people and facilitate their journey toward the Catholic faith. Particularly, oftentimes, they work a lot with the Protestant clergy who are finding themselves on the unexpected journey, career-altering trajectory, let's just say, of becoming Catholic. And Matt Swaim, who for years hosted a morning show out of Cincinnati, Ohio, the Sunrise Morning Show, now putting his work, his skills to work in Washington, D.C. for the Coming Home Network. But he has his own, what he calls the Magisterial Fidelity Picking system when it comes to bracketology. As you know, there are a lot of Catholic schools in the NCAA tournament this year. I forgot to see the official list, but I think it's over 10. And so he has a system for picking, and we'll get the lowdown on that when we have him. I do want to take a little issue with him because he's got my Wildcats losing a first-round game to the Northern Kentucky Norse. So what's up with that, Matt? You're from Central Kentucky. We'll get that straightened out. Before then, though, we'll have John L. Allen Jr. John, who is, as I've said before, probably the most respected Catholic journalist in the English-speaking world, covers the Vatican through his website Crux, works closely with Ines San Martin, who's a regular guest. John has been a guest before numerous times as well, and he's in Rome right now. But we'll talk to him about reflections on the Pope Francis's first term. I'm making air quotes there, of course, because unless one chooses to renounce the papacy or resign from the papacy, as Benedict did, it's pretty much a life gig. And so we don't talk about term limits or four-year terms or whatever, but just to play along and in the spirit of American politics, how do we look at Pope Francis's first term? He just had it yesterday, I think, the four-year anniversary of his election to the papacy and his introduction to the world, and that very understated moment out on the balcony there at St. Peter's Square. So we'll get John Allen's take on that. I'll also ask him how he thinks his Jayhawks are going to do in the NCAA tournament. If you want to be a part of the program today, it is Pi Day. And you know why. You may have to brush off some of your math memory there. It is March 14th. That's 3.14. It's not quite as sweet as it was a couple of years ago when it fell on 2015, and it was 3.1415. By the way, I think that's all the digits of that irrational number that I have memorized, though there are some people with way too much time on their hands who can memorize pi out to, I don't know, 100 digits or more. Now, granted, I can tell you every Final Four team since the mid-70s of every year, so I guess it's a matter of priorities. But my question on Pi Day is, who is your favorite math teacher you ever had and why? That may be, for some of you, that may be sounding me like asking you, you know, who was your favorite sadist that you've ever encountered in your life? Who's your favorite dentist? Okay. But some of you really like math. I happen to be one of those weird people that I like math, even taught it for a couple of years. So your favorite math teacher and why? 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to chime in. 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. So wasn't here yesterday to kind of officially announce to you, though I did put it on the show's blog, and I think I put it out there on social media. This year's version, this is the 8th annual Bracketology with Father Bronner contest, which is sponsored by Firehouse Subs. So Father Frank Bronner, who will be on the show tomorrow, by the way, to give us his Stone Cold Lockdown Final Four picks. But if you enter the Bracketology with Father Bronner contest, which you can do online, if you go to the show's blog, mikeallenshow.blogspot.com, that's mikeallenshow.blogspot.com, you'll see the link there to go online through cbsports.com and join in our particular little pool. And if at the end of things your picks are better than Father Frank's, then depending on how much better, your name will go into a hat for a drawing. So if there are 10 people who beat Father Frank, whoever got the highest score will get 10 slips of paper, next 9, kind of like the NBA lottery is how we do it. And so anyway, you go on there, make your picks. If your picks are better than Father Frank's, your name will go into a hat to win our grand prize this year, which thanks to Bob Conicella of Firehouse Sub, it is one Firehouse Subs. It is one free sub a week for a year. Now, if you've never had Firehouse Subs, they are muy bueno. Very, very good. So if you want to go on there, I think last year we had about, 50 entrants. So even if you know nothing about basketball, sometimes you're at an advantage, by the way. Sometimes you're at an advantage in terms of that. But so we'll see. But we'd love to have you be a part of the contest. You've got till noon Thursday. You can also mail it in, hard copy, the old-fashioned way, but has to be postmarked. And all that's on the show's blog, mikeallenshow.blogspot.com. That is all has to be postmarked by Wednesday if you send it in that way. Yes, there are some games starting tonight. The NCAA calls those the first-round games. I call them the play-in games. So we'll be paying attention to those. But it's, to me, it is to get the brackets. This has probably been the case for me for over 30 years. If sports is a religion, particularly college basketball, and believe me, being in Lexington, Kentucky, it is. If sports or college basketball is a religion, then the week, these first few weeks, a few days after the brackets are announced, are like our highest solemnity. There's the brackets are a thing of beauty. I hope they don't mess with them anymore. I hope they don't try to add more teams and all that stuff and get up to, 200 and whatever they've talked about. No, please leave it as it is. It's perfect. And Thursday and Friday of this week, probably the two best basketball watching days in the calendar year. No question. So anyway, we'll get into that a little bit more with Father Frank tomorrow, though. Matt will give us his system at the end, at the bottom of the hour. Yesterday, took a beautiful drive to Western Kentucky, an area I don't go very often. I was part of my diocesan work. I'm the director of Family Life Ministries for the Diocese of Lexington. That's my full-time gig. And it was a gathering in Owensboro of everybody who's in a similar position in what's called Region 5. So that's like Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana. Not everybody was there, of course, but it was a nice little crowd. And just outside of Owensboro, Kentucky, barbecue capital of the world, look it up, at a retreat center run by the Ursuline Sisters. But, the thing about Western Kentucky and Owensboro, which I've only been to one other time. It was back when I was a Methodist pastor. I actually did a wedding in Owensboro. Sadly, that union did not endure. But hopefully better fruit from my trip to Owensboro this time. But, the thing is, driving through Western Kentucky, yes, I'm sure there are times when you drive through or walk through Kolkata or Beijing. I mean, any of these massive world cities, Seoul, where people are on top of each other. It's a far different thing to have a conversation about the world's population problem than it is to drive through Western Kentucky, which is about as open and wide and unpopulated. I mean, it is, wow. it is sparse, no doubt. And I was driving yesterday morning. It was still dark. I had to be there kind of early. It's a several-hour drive because of daylight savings time and all that. It was still dark when I left. And there was only a big full moon in the sky. And I'm driving down this desolate stretch of road, and I turn the radio off. Oh, that's a mistake. I say that only half tongue-in-cheek, because that's when you start having existential sort of questions. That's when you start having thoughts that sometimes, I mean, there's a reason we love our distractions, because sometimes we don't like to think about the existential questions, about our relative tininess in terms of, just start with the solar system, let alone the seeming infinitude of space. And you begin to think, what does my life even matter at all? You know, when you stare down at an anthill and you see all those little microscopic insects scurrying about, do you ever for a moment imagine that there's something of great significance going on down there? Now, we are in light of even the solar system, more infinitesimal than those ants. And we're scurrying about. I'm driving across the state with it dark outside for an important meeting. What's it all about, Alfie? You can see how apart from a faith in a God whose love is infinite and reaches down to even the smallest of us, what is man that you are mindful of him? How a person could be prone to despair. And we'll talk about this more a little bit toward the end of the hour. When we come back, John L. Allen Jr. of Crux, talk about France's first term. This is The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Fifteen minutes after the hour, you're back on The Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, March 14th. Blessed to have with us live via Skype from the Eternal City, John L. Allen Jr. and Inés San Martín of Crux. Let's just jump right in. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing well, or good afternoon. I do have to ask you, though, this may not be of any concern for Inés. It is March Madness. How you feeling about your Jayhawks?
Well, I mean, obviously, I was feeling better before they lost in the quarterfinals of the Big 12 tournament to TCU, right? I mean, but on the other hand, hey, you know, maybe they got that, like, jinx loss out of their system now, right?
That's true.
And they're ready to go. How are you feeling about your Wildcats, Mike?
You know, I mean, I've been pretty dubious about them, I guess you could say, a lot of the year. Not great defense, but we seem to be playing a little bit better. It's going to come down to matchups. And
What regional are they in again?
We're in the South. We're the 2 seed to North Carolina's 1. So we may have a rematch.
Theoretically, KU and Kentucky could meet in the semifinals?
I think KU and Kentucky, yeah, that's exactly right, of the Final Four. That'd be great.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? Well, if that happens, man, we have to arrange some kind of like, you know, some kind of on-air bet, right? Where, you know, if Kentucky wins, you know, I have to pay for your, you know, what, barbecue ribs dinner. And if KU wins, you have to buy me a plate of Amatriciana in Rome. How's that?
Or I could send you some Kentucky bourbon.
Well, I mean, there's also that.
Well, and we won't bring up Kansas' win in Rupp Arena earlier this year. We'll just slide right past that. So, anyway.
I was trying to be gracious.
Well, you're very gracious. So, you wrote an article, I think yesterday. I was actually in a mass, and the priest mentioned, I hadn't thought about it, that yesterday was the 4-year anniversary of the election of Francis to the papacy. in my mind's eye, sort of flashed back to that scene there at the balcony overlooking St. Peter's Square, and where the world was introduced to Cardinal Bergoglio and a sort of a collective who, from those who are not as well connected and know about the church inner workings as maybe Crux writers. We didn't know who he was. Could you have foreseen, I'll ask both of you this question, could you have foreseen the impact that this pope would make?
Personally, Mike, not really. I mean, as you know, I'm from Argentina, so I'm from where the pope is. And I remember I was with my mom when he, you know, that he was announced that he was a new pope. And we both look at each other and like, what? Really? Him? Like, how did that happen? And, you know, he's, I mean, we always sort of thought of him as this almost shy, not camera friendly, not press friendly guy who, you know, yes, he didn't like the local power and he made it known. But other than that, he wasn't the most, you know, he wasn't Cardinal Dolan. He wasn't all over the place all of the time. So we were like, okay, well, you know, short papacy and then we'll move on. Definitely a great surprise there.
You know, Mike, for me, I was covering the conclave for CNN, right? And so I was watching all this unfold from Rome. And I did have a sense that whoever got elected, the deck was going to be stacked early on in his favor from a media point of view. Because in the days prior to the conclave, you know, in that period between when Benedict XVI resigned, right, at the beginning of the conclave, you know, for almost a full month, you know, we had been on air and in print relentlessly every day, mostly doing negative church stories. I mean, we were talking about the church in crisis, the sex abuse stuff, Vatican scandals. You know, the Vatty leaks thing and you know, the whole thing. It was a kind of like Sturm und Drang environment. And I can tell you internally in CNN, we had talked about this explicitly, that, you know, the climate and the tone of our coverage for such a long period of time had been so overwhelmingly negative that we were hoping that, you know, whoever the next guy was would be a positive story. Right. So I kind of thought that whoever it was would get a break at the beginning. What I could not have anticipated, for all the reasons Inez just mentioned, was how phenomenally successfully the new Pope Francis would exploit that moment of opportunity. I mean, if you think about it, what is it that has made the world fall in love with Pope Francis? It is fundamentally the impression that he is a humble, simple man of the people, right?
Right.
And that narrative was really set about Pope Francis 24 hours into his papacy. Okay, you know, from that first moment when he steps out onto the balcony and kneels down and says he wants the crowd's blessing before he imposes his blessing on them, to the news that he is not going to live in the papal apartment, to the next day when he goes back to the Casa del Clero to pack his own bag and pay his own bill. Yeah. I mean, within 24 to 48 hours, the basic narrative about this pope that was stayed with him for 4 years and still makes him a media sensation was already sort of fully formed. So I thought there was a moment of opportunity. How brilliantly he would take advantage of, I could not have foreseen.
Absolutely. Do you think that he himself sensed the need to do that? I mean, or was this just something he had always thought about himself? Or did he just sense that this was a sort of kairos moment where this is something he needs to do?
Well, I'll give you my take and then Inez can give you hers. I think it's not an either or. I mean, if the question is, was this all just spontaneous and natural, or was he aware of what he was projecting to the world? Right. If that's what you mean.
Right.
You know, what I would say, the answer is both and. OK, I think it was spontaneous and natural in a sense. It is genuinely who the guy is. I mean, it's who he was in Argentina.
Riding the bus.
Who he's been his entire life. So I don't think he was faking it or phoning it in.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, Mike, if you want a 5-star banner headline insight into Pope Francis that you dare never forget, it is that beneath that humble, simple exterior – lies the mind of a brilliant Jesuit politician. Okay, the guy is aware of what he is doing at all times. And he doesn't just have these kind of like, you know, random chance moments. They're genuinely, generally is a strategy behind what he's doing. So in answer to your question, I would say this was both genuinely who Pope Francis is, spontaneously en natural. And he was also aware that the Catholic Church had gone through a fairly difficult period, needed a new lease on life, and that he also wanted to set a new tone for what leadership in the church was going to look like, and was very conscious about doing.
Yeah, and he knew the world was looking. He wasn't just doing it only for the Catholic Church. He was doing it for everyone.
Kind of hard to miss the point with all those cameras trained on you, right?
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, it was a unique moment to actually change the narrative. And as John said, this is a brilliant politician that, you know, beyond his very deep faith, and it's not that he's just a politician, he's obviously a great religious leader, but he does have in mind the fact that the world is watching, and he's trying to use that not only to influence the Catholic Church but also the wider world, which we see constantly when he keeps talking about, I want to visit South Sudan. Is it possible that he goes to South Sudan? At this point, Mike, it's really unknown, yet we keep writing about it basically on a weekly because the guy keeps talking about it, and the world is remembering that there are
hundreds of thousands. There's a crisis in South Sudan that should not be forgotten.
5 million people might die before July of a starvation, and we only know that, at least I only researched that, because Francis told me that he wanted to go there. Hopefully someone read the story.
Oh, yeah.
So in other words, Mike, this is not an either-or situation.
Sure.
It's both. Okay, it's both natural. It's both natural and calculated.
Mm.
Both are true.
There's several really good articles on Crux right now, looking back on the Pope's first term, including
noticing.
Well, there you go, John. One from you: clear wins, mixed verdicts, and unfinished business. Another one where you have contributions from several others, and people can read those and digest them. We've got about 2 minutes left. Let me ask you this: suppose that you could go back in time to the conclave that elected Francis 4 years ago, and you could bring with you and share with all of the voters in that conclave what the next 4 years would bring about in a Francis papacy. Do you think he would be elected more quickly, more slowly, or not at all?
And Inez can give you her answer. My answer to that is more slowly, but he still would have been elected.
Yeah, Peel might have thought about it more. But because, we do see some cardinals today who are like, well, maybe we should have thought about it more, make sure we made our priorities clear to him. But I don't see a lot of buyer's remorse. Like, those who voted for him would have still, but would like to have more influence, I guess, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah. What I actually think, Mike, is that there would be some cardinals who, if they knew exactly what was going to happen over the course of the next 4 years, okay, would still have voted for him, might have pulled him aside and said, you might want to do maybe not quite so many interviews all of the time.
Yeah, or give us a heads up.
Give us a heads up. It's, things like that.
Sure.
Right? But I think the fundamental logic that led to the election of Cardinal Bergoglio in 2013 pivots really on 3 points. One, they wanted somebody who was going to take a more direct role in governing the Vatican, because there was a perception that governance had drifted in the late John Paul and Benedict years too. They wanted to turn to the developing world, and above all, Latin America. And three, they wanted somebody who was going to be an effective missionary that could give the church a kind of new lease on life after what had been a pretty difficult and tumultuous period. I think 4 years later, 2/3 of the college would still say we found the right guy.
Check, check, check. He's definitely fulfilled all those. John and Inez, we're out of time. Thanks so much. Blessings. Go enjoy some spaghetti.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Go Cats.
Thank you. Rock chalk. We'll be back. This is the Mike.
Thanks.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
We're right at the bottom of the hour. Right back on the Mike Allen Show. Pleased to be joined now live via Skype from our nation's capital, Matt Swaim. Matt Swaim of the Coming Home Network, former host of the Sunrise Morning Show. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well. We've got this good delay going on. We're going to pretend that we're in an old dubbed Godzilla movie.
Sounds great, man.
Look, it's Godzilla. Anyway, by the way, Matt, real quick before we before we jump into the your magisterial fidelity edition, a lot of people may be interested. Yeah, I was talking to a guy the other day who was really talking you up. What a great job you had done in terms of the Coming Home Network, in terms of their visibility and social media and so forth. And I came across something I didn't realize, that you've created an online bingo game for watching the show The Journey Home with Marcus Grody on Monday nights.
Yeah, it's very casual. Seth Payne and I were discussing, you know, some of the same keywords come up during a lot of people's interviews, you know. So we've got panels on there for liturgy, panels on there for church history. There's a bingo blank for hitting the head by a 2x4. There are a few other things that seem to be said in almost every Journey Home interview that we decided, yeah, we'll just throw them on a bingo card. And if somebody scores a bingo, maybe we'll give them, you know, a free Kindle download or a book of something from our archive. So, yeah, it's just kind of fun and casual. If you go to chnetwork.org/bingo and watch along with the show on Monday nights, you can maybe win something.
Well, and it has a dual effect, too, because it's great catechesis, because what's more Catholic than bingo?
I mean, come on. That's part of our thinking, and especially for our converts in the audience, they need to get a little practice.
That's right. They're probably not used to drinking games. That might be a little heavy for them, but bingo will work.
That works.
All right, so let's talk about the Magisterial Fidelity Edition. Of course, you grew up, man, in Central Kentucky, so you ought to have at least a pretty deep love of college basketball in your veins. But you've come up with, you know, there are all kind of different ways people choose, sometimes by uniform color or by mascot, people who don't know the game as well. But you've got a distinctly Catholic approach and strategy for filling out your bracket. Let's talk about it.
Well, I have developed this over the course of the past decade, and the criteria are loosely as follows. When a religious school plays a non-religious school, I pick the religious school. Myself as a Catholic, I pick Catholic schools over other religious schools. And then when Catholic schools face Catholic schools, I kind of go on their track record in terms of, you know, their faithfulness to the magisterium or, you know, notable alumni or things like that. And I have to say, Mike, I neglected your UK Wildcats this year, and I should not have, because you pointed out to me as we were discussing this last night that you have a player on your roster, Malik Monk, who is from Lepanto, Arkansas. And Mike, I don't know if you know this, but when the Holy League beat the invading Ottoman army several centuries ago, that is the last time a 16 seed upset a one.
Well played, sir. Well played. Yeah, that struck me all year. I don't think Malik Monk is Catholic, but I need to do a little digging on the origins of that town name in Arkansas, Lepanto, because there had to be some Catholics there.
Yeah, yeah, Lepanto.
So you are at
well,
least
Malik Monk, and
you're breaking up a little bit on me here.
Well, I just want to, before we move on. Yeah, I do want to say something about Malik Monk here. In monastic communities that observe the rule of silence, monks will often develop hand signals to communicate with one another. And as I understand it, your own Malik Monk used some hand signals to try and communicate to the Arkansas bench during the SEC championship. But I'm not sure exactly if they were in the spirit of fraternal charity. That's still open for interpretation.
I think what he was doing, Matt, is he was inviting them to identify with Christ in his death. It was a Paschal mystery sort of thing, you know.
That's what it was.
Unless you die with Christ, you can't be raised, you know.
That's what it was.
Spoken like a true rose-colored glasses UK
fan. Right, and
let
me help you with that.
So, are you regretting picking the Northern?
Yeah, let me help you with that.
You regretting picking the Northern Kentucky Norse over my Wildcats then?
You know, I like the Norse. They're spunky. I actually have the Norse going out a little bit later in the tournament. They make it past NKU, past UC, and actually they go to face Seton Hall in the South Round 4. And actually, because Elizabeth Ann Seton is kind of a special unofficial patron here at the Come Home Network, I picked her Pirates there. We actually every year send out Elizabeth Ann Seton holy cards and medals to the women converts of the Coming Home Network. So I had to give St. Elizabeth Ann Seton and the Seton Hall Pirates a little love in my bracket. They're who actually takes out Northern Kentucky.
Okay, well, then this is where I'm trying to sort out your magisterial fidelity edition, because that must mean you have Northern Kentucky beating Dayton, which is a Marist school. Or, I mean, a Marianist school. Sorry.
It is a Marist school. And Dayton was tricky because I actually – right. I actually have taken a couple classes at Dayton myself, and they actually have the most impressive Marian library outside of the Vatican. There's even actually someone who was once a staff member at the Dayton Library who wrote a master's level thesis on Marian imagery in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I had to give Dayton a little bit of love.
So, but when you're talking about religious school, so it doesn't matter though necessarily. I mean, yeah, you'll choose like the Catholic school over the non-Catholic school, but like BYU, for example, who's not in the tournament this year, that they would qualify.
That would qualify. For some reason, BYU, Baylor, and Duke always end up facing each other in my bracket, you know, some combination out of those three. And that's when I have to get a little tricky, because there are good theologians on the faculty of Duke and Baylor, but, you know, you can't be a theologian on the BYU faculty unless you're a Mormon. So we tend to pick Duke and Baylor. But let's face it, I got Duke going out. Normally, I have them going out pretty early because their mascot is the devil. It's the devil, so we gotta take them out.
Well, and then you know, and then having Grayson Allen on your team on top of it.
Well, some would say that there's a correlation there, but you know, there's some teams here that are secular schools that I've picked pretty far. The one that I picked pretty far this year is Florida State. Now, there are a number of reasons here. First of all, they got a really solid campus ministry down there at Florida State. Second of all, have you seen their roster? One of their top scorers, Dwayne Bacon. I can't vote against Bacon, Mike Allen. And more important,
what if they play on a Friday during Lent, though?
Even though I'm just watching him, I'm not eating him. So the big man, 7'4", Christ Kumaje. Actually, he pronounces it Christ Kumaje. But seriously, Christ is your center. I got to go Florida State down at least to the fourth round when I have them going down to Princeton.
Yeah, so let's get down here to your final four. I see you've got Providence versus Princeton and Seton Hall versus Creighton. So Seton Hall, of course, you talked about the St. Elizabeth Ann Seton connection. Creighton, of course, a Jesuit school right out of Omaha.
Right. Yeah, and I picked them pretty far. They actually play nothing but secular schools all the way up to Seton Hall. And I picked them winning that one just because they've been able to fight their way all through all that secularism. So I've got Creighton in the championship.
Creighton, and then Providence versus Princeton. I guess your principal of Catholic school over. I mean, a lot of people don't know Princeton's roots originally, I think, were Christian.
Right, yeah, and lots of fire and brimstone preachers have come out of Princeton, but not just fire and brimstone preachers. Do you know that the new bishop of Rockville Center, New York, Bishop John Barris, was actually on the JV team for Princeton, the Princeton Tigers, when he was in college? Basketball player. And actually, on my blog post for this, I found a picture in the 70s of Bishop Barris when he was just
Johnny.
Yeah. Barris. dunking with some pretty sweet 70s like World Be Free ABA action going on. So, I mean, I had to go Princeton pretty far.
Yeah, I'll make sure that's linked. It's on my show's blog, a link to your page with the Magisterial Fidelity Edition. Well, you know, maybe, you know, people fill out multiple brackets. Maybe if they're not that concerned with winning the pool, they could make one of their brackets your Magisterial Fidelity Edition.
Maybe so. I can't guarantee that they'll win their pool, but it's as, at least as effective as most other people's methods. And I do say, Mike, I've got Providence winning it all. And this is my line of reasoning. It's Creighton versus Providence in the final for me. And have you ever said to yourself on your darkest night, I'm just going to rely on Creighton to get me through? No, you said I rely on Providence to get me through. So that's who I'm relying on. I've got the Friars taking it all this year.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, you may go put $5 on that in Vegas. Not that we're encouraging problem gambling, but you never know. If it happens, you could be a wealthy man.
If you actually put money on my bracket, that is problem gambling.
Hey, Matt, always great to hear from you. Thanks for the great work with the Coming Home Network, and blessings to you. Enjoy the tournament.
Yay, come see us at chnetwork.org and catholicconspiracy.com to see the bracket.
All right. Take care, Matt. Matt Swain. We'll be back in a minute with more. This is the Mike Allen Show. You are listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, the 14th of March. I almost said Monday there. Feels a little bit like a Monday to me since I was out yesterday, but my pleasure to be with you. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to Mike Allen Show. Go to breadboxmedia.com. You can always go to mikeallenshow.blogspot.com as well. In fact, I encourage you to do so to enter our Bracketology with Father Bronner 2017 contest. Everybody who beats Father Bronner's picks in their bracketology will go into a hat for a drawing to win our grand prize given by Firehouse Sub and our good friend Bob Conicella, Firehouse Subs, a free Firehouse Sub a week for a year. I'm not sure that I would recommend Matt Swaim's Magisterial Fidelity Bracketology picking system, though. I mean, you never know. But I kind of doubt it. Always a pleasure to have Matt on. And like he said, check out the work they do at the Coming Home Network. I myself, on my journey to the Catholic faith, came across books written, published through the Coming Home Network. In fact, I always say when my wife and I came to this place, well, actually it was myself. I had been on this journey of curiosity about Catholicism, being a Methodist pastor at the time. What had started as simple an intellectual interest, just so that I could be better informed about Catholicism. And over time, that intellectual interest or curiosity began to bring forth an attraction. I saw an attractiveness in Catholicism. I'd have these realizations of how the Catholic Church didn't actually teach what I thought the Church taught. Or I would come to discover the biblical reasons, perhaps, behind certain Catholic teachings and practices. Or I would discover that the Catholic faith taught certain things that I kind of already believed. But I still wasn't at that tipping point where it was more than an intellectual appreciation that I thought about becoming Catholic until I went to a local big bookstore, kind of our own version of... it's escaping me. It's called Joseph Beth Bookstore. Anyway, I went there. I was hanging around the Catholic shelf, looking over my shoulder. Came home with two books. One was a book by Peter Kraft called Catholic Christianity. It was a book that was based on the catechism that gave an overview of the whole Catholic faith. And as I often say, reading that book was to me like a discovery of what I call the comprehensive integrity and beauty, a panoramic vision of all these different light bulb moments coalesced into this one great sweeping vista of the Catholic faith. But the other book I brought home was from the Coming Home Network, Matt Swaim's organization, where he's a communications coordinator. It's a book called Journeys Home. It's a book of chapters of testimonies of people much like me, Protestant Christians, evangelical Christians, many clergy who found their way on a journey to the Catholic faith. And reading that book, I discovered there were people who had experienced the very thing I was experiencing. Resonated with me. It was, in many ways, even though the details were different, it was telling my story. Those two books, Coming Home Network's Journeys Home being one of them, one of the two tipping points, really, for me in becoming Catholic. So, Matt, appreciate the work you do. As I said, if you want to learn more about Breadbox Media and what we're trying to do, breadboxmedia.com. Check it out, breadboxmedia.com. I was actually reading a blog today from somebody I haven't even met, who he and his wife and their three children are on a journey into the Catholic Church. They just went through the rite of election with the bishop. They'll be entering the church this Easter and found out that part of their journey was listening to this show, which blew me away, to be honest with you. If you want to chime in, 573-4-BREAD-4. As I said, it is Pi Day, not like apple pie, though to be creative, you could do it. P-I. The Greek letter and ratio of circumference to diameter in a circle, 3.14159. That's as far as I can get. But anyway, if you're a math geek, my question is, who's your favorite math teacher and why? 573-4-BREAD-4. I've shared this story before, but when I was in middle school, I was on the math bowl team, which was a surefire path to girls in popularity. We did win the state championship, but to make us feel like athletes, they gave us letter jackets. And except on the letter S, I went to Southern Junior High. The letter S on the front of our jacket, at the top part of the S, it said, inside there, it was written math. On the bottom part of the S, bowl. So thanks a lot for helping us out there. Just to clarify, we weren't there for basketball or football. We were on the math bowl. And then you know how they give you a little bar to go on your sleeve? Maybe the track team has little, you know, little feet of Achilles, perhaps, or a football has a football in that little bar. Ours was pie. Mm-hmm. They obviously hated us and wanted to make our social lives as miserable as possible. Anyway, so who's your favorite math teacher? I think we did get a couple comments on this question. Let's see. Bonnie says, Jimmy Gash, because he was very smart but could really teach, and math isn't easy to teach. Kathy says, Sister Teresa Joseph, she tried her hardest to teach me math. It didn't work, but she tried and taught me enough so that I could graduate in 1971. Very nice, from Lexington Catholic High School. I had a teacher in college, Dr. Enoch. He was a good math teacher. I'll tell you, the worst math teacher I ever had was a guy by the name of Dr. Gregg, was his name. And Dr. Gregg walked in, this was a high-level math class. I was an engineering major at the time. It was called Matrix Algebra. I mean, this is like beyond Calculus 4. He walks in the first day and he says, y'all just throw your math books away, your textbooks away, because I don't like them. I'm going to teach you my way. Okay. So he proceeded to teach and to talk, and he was sort of like, I guess, some sort of a savant genius or something. But you know what? As they oftentimes say, great athletes sometimes make lousy coaches because they just imagine it comes naturally to everybody. Well, he may have been a great mathematician, horrible teacher. We were so lost, my classmates and I, we would just kind of look at each other in a daze. And I remember I was telling my mother about it. She was like, well, why don't you just ask a question? I'm like, Mom, I don't even know what to ask. And so it came the day for the final. And he hands out the final. It was like 9 questions. And very big questions. And I did the first 2. I left the last 7 blank. And I looked around the classroom, and we were all kind of making contact with each other, shrugging our shoulders, kind of silently laughing, like saying, what the heck? I don't even know where to start. Well, it turns out I got on the final. I think I got a 23 out of 100. And it was third or fourth highest in the class. The average, a 17. The average on the... Now, that, friends, is some pretty bad teaching. I did want to mention a couple of things. The good news, in fact, in the first reading today from Isaiah 1. You know, this is a season of penance, of turning from our sins. Wash yourselves clean, the prophet says. Put away your misdeeds from before my eyes. Cease doing evil. Learn to do good. Make justice your aim. There comes a certain point in Lent, maybe, where we feel, maybe we're already into it. We feel like we've already flopped in whatever our penitential commitment was for the season. Here we are in the second week. Perhaps that's why the words of the prophet should be an encouragement. Come now, let us set things right, says the Lord. Though your sins be like scarlet, they may become white as snow. Though they be crimson red, they may become white as wool. If you're willing and obey, you shall eat the good things of the land, but if you refuse and resist, the sword shall consume you, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. So, our Lord's property is always to have mercy. So anyway, let's real quick dial up the Dial a Catechism wheel. We got about a little over a minute left. We'll go to random.org, our random number generator. Dial up a number between 1 and 2865. 2291. Let's see. 2291. Almost there. Be patient. There we go. The use of drugs. Interesting. This is under respect for health in the moral life. The use of drugs inflicts very grave damage on human health and life. Their use, except on strictly therapeutic grounds, is a grave offense. Clandestine production of and trafficking in drugs are scandalous practices. They constitute direct cooperation in evil, since they encourage people to practices gravely contrary to the moral law. Now notice, it doesn't say the government civil law, to the moral law. Our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. Now, there's a whole can of worms topic we can get into. For example, could a Catholic in good conscience use marijuana recreationally? There are those who argue yes. I would say no, because I don't think there's any other use but to get high, whereas a drink perhaps may be enjoyed for other reasons. But obviously, that's a topic for another day. But certainly, don't do drugs. That's for free. We'll be back this tomorrow by God's grace. This is the Mike Allen Show. Bracketology with Father Bronner. Don't forget, be back with you tomorrow.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.